A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
On today's podcast, author Garth Jones and I discuss David Michaud's 2014 film, The Rover. My name is Justin Hamilton, and you're listening to Big Squid Presents. Hello, thanks for joining me today. I have some news for you after this podcast, but for now, let's get right into this from Blue Tongue Films. Set in the near future, where the rule of law has disintegrated along with the rest of society, a drifter known as Eric wanders across this desolate and dangerous land alone. When thieves steal his only remaining possession, Eric chases after them and is soon accompanied by Ray, a man who has a connection to the people who stole from him. It's time to enter the world of the Rover.
It's over for you.
I know that. Whatever you think's over for me was over a long time ago.
Let's go! Come on!
Turning around, he's gone!
What do you mean he's gone? He's my brother!
I am rapt that we suggested this movie because I didn't realise you hadn't seen it before.
I fucking loved it.
Yes, great. I got the email from you and I was in the middle of working at The Chase and I saw the headline and I'm glad that you had that reaction to it.
I am, absolutely. Like, I'm shocked that my cultural cringe was such 10 years ago that I didn't see it at the time.
Yeah.
It was like probably Cinema Nova.
Yep.
In Melbourne, probably bypassed it for some other piece of shit. But like, yeah, this is like, what a fucking movie. Like, David Michaud, I'm going to put it out there now so I can pronounce it properly.
Yes.
Michaud, not Michaud.
Yes.
Where is he now? What's going on?
Oh, well, you know, he is a phenomenal director and it's, while I quickly just look that up, does this technically fit into the Ozploitation genre or I kind of feel that it does, but it's almost like it's a Ozploitation movie with all of the camp taken out.
I mean, backing up the truck, we originally suggested Wake in Fright to discuss
the movie. Yep.
The film, not the TV series, because no one wants to do that. But we discovered that you can't actually watch it in like, Australia.
Couldn't even find it on YouTube. Like normally
on fucking YouTube. Like it's like a, you know, like a grainy 1997 rip or something.
Yeah. And it's also unedited. Like it's not the, like it's the not the right one.
So we're going to get there eventually, but like, and you threw this one out. I'd never seen it. And it's a shockingly under rated Australian film that's just blown my mind.
Well, that's good because it is the point of this podcast is to look at these great films that, you know, because we do have cultural cringe at the moment and we don't give Australian movies a go. David Michaud.
And I think, in reference to your question, like exploitation-wise, like it's like anti-exploitation. Like I read some interviews with the director, David Michaud, talking about how he was, you know, this is like not Mad Max.
Yes, yes.
You know, the cars are all just like someone's got them down their suburban driveway.
Yeah.
And that's the end of the world. Like you need to, and there's lots of nihilistic, depressing stuff we'll probably tuck into while we're discussing this. But yeah, like that's literally like a dude's just like decided that like he's going to drive around the wasteland now.
Yeah.
And that's what it is. It's like, you know, it's regional South Australia.
Yeah. Well, it's a hell of a run of films. So he does Animal Kingdom in 2010, which is a stone cold classic. That is a hell of a film. Then you get The Rover. The one I haven't seen is War Machine, and I don't know why I wouldn't have seen it because it has Brad Pitt in it, and Tilda Swinton and Ben Kingsley, Anthony Michael Hall, and it's a satirical war comedy film. So that's the one I haven't seen. But I was a fan of The King as well that he did with Timothy Chalamet, and also has Robert Pattinson coming in, fucking pitching 1,010 in that movie as well. And his next one, which is coming out this year, is called Wizards. And it was shot in Cairns, and there just doesn't seem to be, off the top of my head, much other information other than it stars Pete Davidson, Naomi Scott, Sean Harris, and Orlando Bloom. And also another story by that he's collaborated with, you know, my Australian man crush and Joel Edgerton. I love
him. Nash, Joel. Yeah.
Oh, I love Nash as well. He's fucking, I've been lucky enough to spend a bit of time with Nash, and it's like, God damn it. This is what a cool Aussie man is. So this is a fucking bleak film. Before we get into, you know, talking about how much we loved it, like if you're going to watch it, like maybe have some really crunchy snacks to chew on to get you through the stress, or even just have a bit in your mouth.
Well, yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's I was dropped straight into it, and I was like, oh, actually, this feels like exactly what it's like living in the bush.
Yeah.
But then also, there's nowhere to go.
There's nowhere to go.
And there's nowhere to go.
And it's such a brutal and perfect beginning, because I would say the opening credit of Australia 10 years after the collapse, for me, that's right up there with A Long Time Ago and A Galaxy Far, Far Away. Like, you just automatically know exactly where you are, even though whatever it is you're about to find out.
Yeah, I mean, I did a lot of, I like this film doesn't have like a lot of reviews or like there's not a lot of like stuff out there.
No. But
the idea of just like the collapse is what we're talking about, which is like, sorry, listeners, but imminent.
Or, yeah.
You know, depressed, you know, Dave Anthony, at Dave Anthony, you know, Twitter. It's a thing that will happen. You know, it's everything you enjoy is going to go away.
Yeah.
And fuck, what do you do?
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is Guy Pearce's character, Eric, who's not referred to by Eric in the film, but like, he's just, yeah, it's just like, how do you behave when like everything that you know has ended?
Yeah. Yeah. I have to say the cinematography by Natasha Breyer is out of control. Like, it's so It is bleak, but it is also incredibly beautiful. And I feel like it's out of a lot of the Australian movies that we've watched, it's as you said earlier, it feels like the outback. It feels exactly like what we've experienced in everyday life.
Yep. I mean, yeah, I mean, having, you know, waking up in the middle of the desert is a pretty confronting thing, and like being knocked out by Scoot McNairy.
Oh, yeah.
Prior to that.
Yeah.
You know, that's, you know, if you're, it's isolation is like hard to contemplate, I guess, but like, yeah, that's the most isolated you're going to be. No car, no, you know, you're going to have to walk like 100 kilometers to go anywhere.
Yeah. And it is, you know, I think it was kind of just sort of saying it's like a Mad Max film is, it's being a little bit lazy because it's the first step, and it, I think it's much more the realistic Mad Max. It's the Mad Max with all the camp taken out, which is the part that lots of people fail to, you know, talk about. Like, it wasn't until I was much older that I realized how gay Mad Max movies are, don't you think? Like, in their hot pants with their butts out and, you know, running around in leather and Bubba Zanetti.
It looks like a fucking good time. Like, it's a fun apocalypse. Like, just get the armor all, like, off you go. Like,
yeah.
Get your vinyl pants from, like, Hound Dog. That's a reference I've run from 25 years ago. Just fucking the apocalypse looks pretty fun.
Yeah, as long as you're on the right team.
Yeah. But this is, like, the very, you know, foot in the throat moment where you're like, oh shit, this actually would be a terrible thing to experience.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like having to like barter for like basic things. Like initially I was like, where's the petrol?
Yeah.
Where's the petrol? Why can they drive around? There's all these things where you're just sort of like, well, shit's not working very well.
Yeah, I think you probably just go from vehicle to vehicle, and it must come through. You know, there's that quite not scary, but I guess it's it feels like a dream when the trains go past, and I feel like they're probably filled with fuel. That's why you've got all the soldiers on them, and that it gets parceled out where it can.
Yep. And that's like a reference to like China being the dominant global superpower at that point.
Yeah.
That's the Australia is essentially like a regional mining outpost again. Yeah. I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. That's exactly what it looks like.
Yeah.
Also the beginning with the, Australia 10 years after the collapse, and I couldn't help, but I suddenly felt like, I felt like I was on the other side of the world of Interstellar. You know, it's like they're all off doing things over there, but these are the poor bastards left behind.
Yep.
it's brutal.
Yeah, it is like, essentially like just people just hanging out in the middle of nowhere doing
whatever.
Just grinding. Yeah.
I'm glad I didn't realize his name was Eric. I don't think it was ever mentioned in the movie. I've seen it a few times. And then when I looked it up and it said his name was Eric, I was like, oh, okay. But Guy Pearce is, seems a bit, lame to just say, guess what? Guy Pearce was great.
Guy Pearce is great. What a fucking king. Like, why is his career not as, I mean, he's chosen to do what he does, but like, it's, he's just a shockingly great actor.
Yeah. He is, his stillness and how quiet he is, and you can't take your eyes off him, you know, from the start when you see him in his car and then pulling into that bar to just sort of sit by himself. Even that bar is shockingly well made in the world building sense. You know, it is a place that is, even the way he kind of gets a drink and the guys in there, and it looks so hot and smelly, and you can't take your eyes off him, and he's not said a word at this point, really. He's just kind of very much a man caught and trapped in his own thoughts, and he is mesmerizing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's astonishing. I mean, like, he's got like a bit of a limp like he's doing some like you know basic sort of like he's building character through like his his bearing. Like he's a very and the fact like the you know the first shot you see of him is just like sitting there with flies.
Yes.
Sitting on his face.
Yeah.
And he just doesn't give a fuck.
Yeah.
That's a indicator of like what he's been through or like what the character journey is going to be. Like he's just a bit of a robot, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. His face doesn't even twitch. I'd be having a nervous breakdown as an actor, but Guy Pearce manages to hold it back. While he's in the bar, we cut to three men, Archie, Caleb and Henry, fleeing in a truck after a robbery has gone wrong. They've left behind Henry's injured brother, Ray. The men have an argument and the car flips, which we see from the perspective of the bar that Eric is in. Hell of a shot that with all that kind of, what is it? It sounds like Japanese kind of music, pop music.
I think it's Cantonese.
Cantonese.
Yeah. There's a range of like different, Asian cultures mixed up in it. But yeah, it's interesting that like, Michaud has gone with that idea of like, you know, that's where we're at 10 years time, I guess.
Yeah. And it's kind of this, the shot for when people see the film is Eric's in the bar with the music playing, which is very gentle and quite sparse. And then you just see the car through the window flip and crash. It's a hell of a stunt. Like it's an old school, you know, there's weight to it, you know?
It's a George Miller situation.
And that's where the comparisons to Mad Max are correct. You know, that's what I mean about it, or feeling like it's a halfway point in comparison, but you have to go the full way and point out how stripped it is of just about everything. No arseless chaps whatsoever. He's not in the film for long, but casting Scoot McNairy is a winning move, right?
Yeah, I had to go back and think about Scoot. Obviously, well, to my detriment, I've seen Batman versus Superman.
At the
cinema. But yeah, like he's obviously got like a career outside of that. Where,
wow. I can't begin to tell you how you could have given me 30 guesses and I would not have remembered him in that.
He was the guy who exploded.
I remember now, but the movie that I always think of him in when his name comes up is Killing Them Softly, you know, once Scoot and Ben Mendelsohn as a useless double act is one of the great things. And that's a movie that has one of the all-time great last lines in a film. So if anyone's never seen that.
Brad's hair is on point in that as well. I've seen that as well. But yeah, for some reason, like I always think of, unfortunately. he is a underused asset, and I think when we get towards the end of the movie, like holy shit.
Well, that's why you have someone like Scoot, because you need that ending to land, and even though it's only three scenes, all those scenes kind of land because he gives them the gravitas.
Devastating.
The men survive the accident, jump out of their truck that is trapped in debris, and steal Eric's car. And finally, Eric comes to his senses, jumps in the truck, and takes chase. Man, I love this chase scene. One of the things I love about this chase scene is that they can't get once again, it's a little bit of character building as well. The three guys take Eric's car because they can't get the truck out of the debris, but he can. Like sitting with him just working it out is great, and it tells you something about the life that he's lived.
He's essentially the Terminator.
but he's also quite clearly a guy who's lived out there all this time, and probably when shit was fine has ended up in a situation where it's fucking hard to get your truck out.
When I saw them do that, I was like, that's pretty basic, guys. Fucking car. It's not that hard to do. Just like there are coils of like hose, I guess, hosing.
Yeah.
And it's just like, just fucking move it, or just like back over it, just change gear.
Yeah.
But like, that's, I guess we're going to talk about ideas around like
again, Americans and like people coming into Australia and not understanding the landscape.
Yes.
And like, it's a basic, you know, situational ideal that you can just like fix that pretty quickly. You can be pretty pragmatic about it. But yeah, that was hilarious. It's like, just back over it. Just change here, dudes. Yeah.
Well, it also speaks to whatever they've been up to. This is probably why it hasn't gone well, because they can't even work this out.
Yeah, absolutely. Come on, guys. Yeah. And there's like David Field, who's like a amazing Australian character actor, who's only like 15 years older than us.
Yeah.
Shocked to discover.
Yeah.
But yeah, like he's like one of the characters in Archie in that scene. And
yeah.
He should know.
Yeah, well, they're...
He should know.
I think they're all a bit useless, especially when we see what's gone down. And I also love that there's just so many different accents in this movie. You know, it's like people have just come from all over the world to try and find somewhere to go, ending up here and, you know...
This is how it's worked out, yeah.
This is how it's worked out. But the chase scene, it I'm not saying...
like just the creeping sort of Jaws like notion of like him sort of stopping and starting.
Yeah.
Like Eric sort of like creeping on them as they sort of try to escape from him. Like all that sort of just like just a. They've got guns.
Yeah.
He doesn't fucking care.
Yeah. No, no. Yeah. He is centered. But also, I'm not saying this chase scene is comparable. In the way of excitement, because it's one of the great chase scenes of all time. But what it did mildly remind me of is Steve McQueen in Bullet, where one of the underrated aspects of that chase scene is there is a bit of cat and mouse and a little bit of, you know, it doesn't kick off immediately. It's one of those ones where it's, I'm behind him, he's kind of onto me, he's just going to move to the left. It's all quite gentle, and then suddenly it then picks up and becomes... you know, for me, the greatest chase scene in a movie. And this is kind of just like the start of it, where he, you know, Eric completely, as you said, those guys have guns, but his focus on them completely rattles all three of them. Like, and it makes sense, because in a lesser film, you just think, well, they just should have shot him and that would be the end of the movie. But they are just too freaked out by this guy. None of it quite makes sense.
Yeah, he's, as I said, like he's a Terminator. Like he's got like a, his objective, as you'll find out, you know, controversially to some people, I guess. But yeah, like he's got an objective. And he's a very pissed off individual.
Yeah. Yeah, he's an angry man. We'll explore that when it arrives in the film. The men knock Eric out and leave him and the truck abandoned. Also when he comes to and he finds the keys to the truck, I like the editing there, which makes you think, man, he's woken up and he's had to look for a while as well. It's not one of those ones where, oh, there it is. Like he's had to really put in the effort. But we go back to Ray, the brother who was left behind. He's injured. He's surrounded by dead soldiers. He gets into an army truck and goes looking for his brother. And this was the film, for me, that made me really sit up and take proper notice of Robert Pattinson. This was a little bit... this felt a little bit like Brad Pitt's California performance, you know, and... what's your history with Pattinson?
I have seen 50% of the Twilight films.
Yeah, I've seen a few of them for reviews,
mainly for girlfriends.
Yeah,
I hate to say that, but and I remember seeing Breaking Dawn Part 2 with Martin Sheen, extremely drunk in Foster in Northern New South Wales. I think he's great. Like, you know, not as a Batman stan or anything, but like he's legitimately going for it.
Yeah.
I'm a fan. Yeah.
And,
you know, some of the reviews I read of this were sort of like on the fence. But fuck, he's like worked with Cronenberg.
Yeah.
Like he's going for it.
Yeah.
So Cedric Diggory or whatever it was in like Harry Potter, like, so what?
Yeah, yeah. Look, it's I don't kind of shit on that stuff because he was young and that was, you know, they're all good starting points and he makes his money and he gets his name out there.
I mean, I watched the Weird Al Yankovic, you know, biopic the other day with Daniel
Radcliffe,
yeah. And fucking great.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So much fun.
But the thing is that, you know, he had a less interesting route that he could have taken.
Yeah.
And he took chances. He, getting a little bit of ahead of ourselves. But Michaud said that Patterson auditioned for this.
Yeah.
And he had to win it over other actors. And he was blown away by his smarts. And he I think he was kind of expecting a little bit of a pretty boy. And then he comes in and he just commits completely to this role. Like, you know, he comes in at 100 Ks an hour in The King. And I love him in Tenet. Like, you know, that whole performance there. He's an interesting actor. And, I'm thankful we have someone in that age range because it feels like, you know, he's going to avoid. Like, I know he's making The Batman, but he's making that with Matt Reeves, you know? It's The Lighthouse, yeah. But he's
like,
not.
Just watching him do that stuff, like, he's clearly up for a challenge. And, you know.
But he's not. He's working with directors. He's not working with people who are given something to direct, which is, you know, the problem with a lot of these big blockbusters now.
I'm into him. Yep.
Fuck, he's funny in The Lighthouse. That movie is so funny.
Who doesn't want to wank with Willem Dafoe, hey?
like when you put it that way, I'm not entirely sure who would turn that down. But he's, God, he fucking looks like he stinks in this film as well. It's
There's the Lost City of Z as well. Have you seen that?
No, I haven't seen that.
Okay, that was like, I think it was 2015, 2016, which is like a... It's a film about like what are they doing? I guess they're essentially just like hunting for like gold in the 1930s.
Right.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
It's really good.
And
he plays against type again, you know, like he's just completely unrecognizable, just doesn't give a fuck.
Yeah, he's great in Claire Denis' movie High Life, if you've ever seen that before. Another film that kind of makes you feel like you have to chew on something while you watch it, but Good Times. The Safdie brothers is also another.
This is
fantastic.
The Robert Pattinson fangirl podcast.
Mate, I don't give a shit. Like, if anyone wants to fucking question me on it, I'll fucking get a tattoo. I'm ready to go with Pattinson.
Need more evanescence in the Batman, though.
Look, don't get me. Anyway, I'm so fucking done with comics and. You know what? Alan Moore brought me into the world of loving comics, and Alan Moore has taken me out.
He's ushered me out, yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Thunderman has cooked
destroyed.
Me.
Yeah.
Can't think about it. Not think about it. We're working on The Chase. There was a poor guy who was just absolutely lovely, 54, talked about how he makes costumes and, you know, has his Star Wars kits and all this kind of stuff. And all I could think about was Alan Moore talking about our infantilized culture. And I was like, oh, man, I'm out.
It's done. Yeah, it's done. It's done. Yep.
So Eric wakes up, finds the keys to the truck and drives to the next town looking for the stolen car. At this point, not talking about the whole film, but at this point, were you just a little bit fascinated as to why he just didn't keep the truck? Because the truck looks better to me.
It's a good truck. Yeah, absolutely. It's just, yeah, I think all the narrative choices are driving you towards, like, why does he care so much about his Holden Commodore 2009, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And yeah, he's like relentless. And you know, that truck, I mean, we live in an SUV age now and that truck's a bit shit.
Right.
But like, it's a, it definitely drives you into wondering what the fuck's going on with this guy. Yeah.
I wonder if one of the, you know, the movie didn't do well at the box office and as you said, seems to have
so depressing.
Sunk between the, you know, the cracks a little bit. I wonder if, you know, to be critical of the film, I wonder if there maybe was something in the language, you know, like I need, you know, because he just says over and over again, I want my car. That's pretty much the sentence that he says.
Yep.
And that's a choice. And I understand the choice. But I wonder if a lot of people watching it forget to think about why he wants the car. So I wonder if, you know, just some simple language choices of, you know, I need it or I have to have it, you know, just to kind of change it up, just so it kind of locks into people's conscious a little bit. I don't know.
I read a review that compared this to The Big Lebowski.
Hell yeah.
Just want my rug back.
Yeah, yeah. But he says it in a lot of different ways.
He sure does, yeah.
Yeah, so maybe there's something to that.
I think it just comes back to cultural cringe. I just don't think, like, it made $300,000 off, like, a $3 million budget, something like that.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
It's just insane. And it's like, this is a fucking great movie.
Yeah.
It is a legitimately excellent film that was at Cannes. It's, you know, I hate to, like, roll out Tarantino again, but, like, you know, he's someone who's, like, on top of it and saying this is, like, a great piece of cinema. But Australians just don't appreciate what we're actually doing in our own backyard. And there's only like a few, unfortunately, male directors like Ivan Sen, Michaud, you know. But there's not a great amount of Warwick Thornton,
yeah,
a great amount of cinema being made. But we fucking kill it, but no one goes to see it.
Yeah.
It's really, really upsetting.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's just deranged that we can't see like how good we are.
Well, I wonder if it comes. You know, there's that interview that I heard. I think we've discussed this before with Steven Soderbergh when he made Lucky Logan, and he said to the production company and everything. He said, "We're not going to promote this. Like, it's ridiculous that if a movie costs $100 million, you have to spend $100 million promoting it. Like, that is a ridiculous way." It's just a waste of money. We're going to do this in a smarter way. We're going to do this in a better way. And we're going to do this in a cheaper way. And at the end of him explaining what they did, and he said, and I was wrong. The movie just sunk like a stone. Yep. And I wonder if part of the problem with Australian films is that unless you've got the Baz Luhrmann cachet of production and promotion, the fact is that I would have a guess that actually people listening to this podcast, please let us know, did you ever hear of this film when it first came out? Like maybe it's just the lack of promotion budget.
Yep.
I don't know.
I mean, as I said, like I think I noticed it was on at Nova.
Yeah.
On Lygon Street.
Yeah.
Like in a very limited sort of window. So maybe that's just not a thing that people are aware of.
I also have a bit of a theory that because of the proliferation of blockbusters, that people don't see films you know, the majority of people don't see films for any other experience but a good time. And, you know, it's like you didn't go and see Schindler's List to have a good time. You went to Schindler's List to see a master director's take on an important novel about an important time in history. And you learnt about it and you went in to engage with different emotions. And I when I talk to people, especially younger people, that seems to be like when I bring that up, it's like saying, you know, I ice skate wearing nothing but toenails. Like it just makes no sense to them.
Yep.
And, yep. You know, like I'll tell you here and now, Oppenheimer is going to fucking crater because, and I reckon it'll probably be his best film, but I just don't think anyone wants to go and see a film like that. They want to go and see something that's fun at the cinema.
Yeah, I guess this is like the post-pandemic world where it's all just like you don't go for like any sort of elevation. You're just going because you want to have a good time.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, I get it, but like I went and saw The Flash the other week because I'm a moron. And
mate, you got to do what I do. As soon as the movies come out, read all the spoilers and inoculate yourself.
I did the Justin Hamilton. I took a bottle of wine,
right,
into the film.
Yeah,
and it was just like, fucking, what is the fucking point of this? Like, yeah. I thought it was, you know, it was fun at the time.
Right.
It was like, hey, there's George Clooney. Hooray!
Yeah.
That's something I understand. Hey, yeah. There's, you know, like a reference to something I get from like when I was 12. But yeah, the overall experience was just completely numbing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't care about the special effects. The special effects were fine. But I just find it completely, it's just a innovating experience, I guess, now, just to go into the movies and just like see the same shit that you saw when you were 10.
Yeah.
I look forward. I made a note in the diary to go and see Oppenheimer.
Yeah.
So talk about it. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's going to be pretty fantastic, especially knowing the source work, and it'll be tense and that. But, you know, when I see, you know, the press that's coming out and some of Nolan's peers have said, hey, you know, you've kind of made an R-rated horror movie about the nuclear bomb. Yep. And I just go, man, this movie's fucked. Everyone's going to go and see Barbie. And also the comparisons between Barbie, Mission Impossible, and Oppenheimer are so ridiculous because it's kind of like comparing, I don't know, the new Taylor Swift album with the new Arctic Monkeys and a new Ruchi Sakamoto album. Do you know what I mean? It's like they're, I know they're all music, but they're all very different things. And everything's reduced to box office. Taylor Swift.
Is Taylor sold out?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't give a fuck. Like, I'm not against her, but I also don't care. In the town, he visits an opium den and discovers a little person and two Chinese acrobats from a
travel. It's going to be a three-hour podcast. Yep.
Oh, yeah. It'll be fine. We'll get there. He visits an opium den and discovers a little person and two Chinese acrobats from a traveling circus in the back room. Did you realize they were from a traveling circus, or did you notice that only when you did your
research? I looked it up. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't realize that either.
I mean, it makes sense. But yeah, there was nothing I could find that actually like helped me understand. But it, you know, regional South Australia, sure.
Yeah. Well, but this is, once again, this is
detail.
Well, this is part of, you know, the criticism that I have of the film is I love that it's minimalist, but maybe you could have given us a little bit more. And I think, you know, like even seeing like part of the circus all kind of manky and, you know, just something to, because I wouldn't have known lots of stuff unless I, you know, did the research.
No, I didn't pick it up at all, no.
The little person takes Eric to his trailer to buy a gun. He throws a rock at a chained and defenseless dog. He attempts to sell the gun to Eric for $300, but Eric doesn't have that amount, tries to barter for less. And in the end, he just shoots the little person and leaves with the gun. And what does it say about me that I was fine with him being shot after he threw the rock at the dog?
Well, we'll learn more and more about that, won't we?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a character moment. I think we liked Eric more.
Well, absolutely. But there's also part of what I love about that scene is there's a moment after he shoots him that he's just kind of, I actually didn't want to do that. You know, it's not regret, but he didn't want to go that far.
No. It's what, 15 minutes into the movie? 20 minutes into the movie?
Oh, no, it's further than that.
Is it further?
Yeah. Because we've had the opening, we've seen what's happened to Ray. Yeah. You know,
it's a moment where it's like, well, this isn't Mad Max.
Oh, yeah.
This is like, actually, like, he's just like a ruthless, you know, individual who's going to be ready to, you know, take care of himself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's like most violence in the real world, which is when it happens it's so quickly.
Sudden. Yeah.
Yeah. And you're like, whoa.
Hang on a minute.
Jesus Christ.
He was a nice guy.
You know, he just wanted his money for the gun.
American dollars, not Australian dollars. And
see, that's a tasty little touch that I like.
Well, yeah, I mean, the whole critique of capitalism is like super fun, but never really, you know, explored too hard. You know, the idea that like, you know, a lot of these people have like migrated to Australia to work in the mines because this is the last industry that's happening on the planet.
Yeah.
Ironically, I guess, American dollars this was written in like 2009, 2010.
Yeah.
So ironically, American money is still worth something.
Yeah.
Whereas after the global financial crisis, maybe it wouldn't have been such a big deal. But yeah, like people have migrated to Australia to live in outback towns and do mining, and this is where they've ended up.
Well, the other thing is that maybe American dollars don't hold the same cachet that they once did, but they're probably still worth more than Australian dollars.
Well, they just don't know because there's no internet.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, there's just nothing to tell you that like, yeah, that money is worth nothing. I mean, there's a conversation where it's like, this is just paper.
Yes.
And that's entirely correct. Or, yeah. That scene with the grandma where it's just like, oh my God.
Oh yeah. So Eric goes in and has a confrontation with the opium den's owner, which is the grandma. And far out, when she offers him to sleep with one of the boys, and it's like, oh, like the way she does it as well, it's a really kind of skin crawling moment. And that actress is amazing, by the way. Like, she's only in it for a little while, but she's pitching 100 k's an hour as well, don't you think?
Gillian Jones, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, and she's been around for, you know, she's like 76 now, I think.
Yeah.
Been around for a while.
Oh, my gosh. She's so good. When Eric returns...
It's devastating because it's just like the... I mean, yeah, not wanting to constantly think about the apocalypse, but, like, it's on your mind. The casual economy of, like, what people will do...
Yeah.
...is just pretty heartbreaking, I guess.
Yeah. Well, there's, you know, there's no society, and without any society, there's no sense of right or wrong.
Yeah.
This
is a fun podcast for a role. Yeah.
Well, you know, it's like, fuck it, we gave him Steelclaw.
Hey, how about Howling 3?
Yeah, absolutely. When Eric returns to his truck, he finds Ray there, barely hanging on, looking for his brother. He faints, and Eric finds out about a doctor that will treat Ray. The opium den, madam. You know, also the first interaction between Pierce and Patterson is great, but also the shopkeeper is fantastic as well, and that's only a small moment, but when he's going in and just trying to find out information, he has to buy literally like a can of beans or something to be allowed to, you know, ask his simple question of where this doctor is. It's all riveting.
Have you been to Yunta?
Whereabouts is that? That
feels... That's between Broken Hill and Adelaide.
I honestly think I've driven through it.
I reckon you have, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, that's the situation. Like, you're literally, like, buying petrol.
Yeah.
Well, not quite through, like, the window, but, like, yeah, it's a similar scenario where you're just like, oh, my God, like, I'm as remote as I can be.
Yeah, yeah.
And I need to parlay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The doctor stitches up Ray, but the next day two vehicles approach. Eric senses danger and realizes they're the traveling circus members seeking revenge after he shot their little buddy. They kill the doctor's companion, and Eric kills all of them before leaving with Ray. Far out. Like, this scene, once again, the violence happens so quickly, and we also learn that, Eric's a good shot, right?
Yeah, he seems to be, yeah.
Yeah. That whole scene, that whole area of, you know, the poor woman trying to look after Ray, where she is, but it's all the dogs out the back, which is quite mesmerizing and speaks to the end of the film. But at the time, you don't know it. And it's, you know, the revelation that she has to keep them caged up because they're, A, dogs that families have left behind, and B, she has to protect them because if people find them, they'll eat them. And you're like, yep, this movie just keeps getting a little bit more bleak, doesn't it?
Yep. Yeah, no comment. Yep.
Yeah.
Plenty
of Eric and Ray stay at a motel, and Eric is away from the room, but Ray sees an army vehicle driving down the street, hides behind a bed with a revolver. Someone rattles the door and he fires, but discovers he's murdered the motel owner's daughter. Soon the soldiers begin shooting before Eric comes to the rescue and kills the soldiers. One of those soldiers is Nash Edgerton that gets blown away.
Rest in peace, Nash.
Yeah. Nash. What a shame. I still love you, Nash. It's an interesting conversation that comes out of this because it feels like it's a turning point for Ray where he's obviously casually killed people in the past that in his head that he can kind of make sense of, but accidentally killing this poor girl, you know, he suddenly feels remorse, and it feels like he starts to kind of be a slightly different person to the guy that we meet at the start.
It's, yeah, I think it's interesting too that, like, the conversation towards the end of the movie where Scoot accuses Guy Pearce Eric of brainwashing his brother.
Right.
You know, like, he's like, what have you done to him?
Yeah.
Because he's not a murderer.
Right.
And now he's turned this corner.
It's a
pivot point, and it's a interesting sort of notion that, like, because you learn more about Eric as we go on in the film.
Yeah.
And maybe he's a malign influence.
Right.
You know?
That's an interesting read. I don't know. I don't know if I read it that way, but that is an interesting way of looking at it.
He's like an angel of death to some extent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I kind of felt that. I wondered if through, like, that's interesting. I kind of, you know, getting to the, well, we may as well just go to the ending then. Hang on a sec, because we've kind of jumped ahead, and there's still an interesting. We'll just skip it. All right. They eventually arrive at the place that the men have escaped to and find Eric's car, and Ray wants to confront his brother, but Eric must be talked into it, and soon the scene devolves into violence. So I guess he has changed him, but. I think
that was my interpretation of the last scene where it was like, you know, sure, they may have abandoned Ray, but, like, maybe Eric has done a lot of bad work in the interim.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Eric gets, you know, everyone ends up dead, essentially. And it's, you know, probably where this movie was always going to land with these characters. Eric gets his car back, and we discover why he's been so keen to get it back. And it turns out that his dead dog is in the boot. And the film finishes with him burying his pal. And I was surprised. I know quite a few people who hated this ending. And I thought it was actually quite touching.
Hated it.
Sorry?
Who hated it? Why? What was the issue with the ending?
They thought it was lame.
It's literally, I guess, it's what you do in the apocalypse. Hang on.
I love the ending. To me, the ending about getting the dog is it's him burying the last traces of his humanity. I mean, that's what it is.
I mean, you know, the story about his wife and like her cheating on him and all the rest was sort of like superfluous to like the dog. But yeah. I think it's I think it works really well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't cry about it, guys.
Yeah. Well, I love this film. I think it's great. I think it's really worthwhile seeing. I'd love them to kind of bring it back to the big screen and, for people, because I was lucky enough to, I saw it as a preview. And so I saw it in like a Hoyts or something like that. Yep. So I saw it in pristine quality and thought this is going to be massive. And then virtually no one saw it.
$300,000.
Yeah. Definitely worthwhile seeing, but is also, be prepared that if you're just looking, if you're a cinema goer who just wants a fun, good time, this is not the movie for you.
Go and see Barbie.
Go and see Barbie.
I'll see Barbie too.
I'll see Barbie.
I'd like to go and see Barbie with you.
Yes, I would too.
Yeah.
I'm not against Barbie. I'm against all the tedious asshats who seem to be excited to see Barbie, and when you say, oh yeah, I am too because I'm a Greta Gerwig fan, say what? Or oh yeah, but she's married to that dickhead Noah Baumbach, and you go, great, this is a good conversation. I'm so glad.
Well, yeah, there's that too.
Yeah. Anyway,
let's go and see Barbie. I'm going to be in Sydney in September.
Oh right, will it still be going in September?
Hopefully, yeah.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
We'll go and hold hands.
End of July. We'll dress in pink and go and see it.
Done.
Where can people find you? And you've released your three volumes of...
On Twitter and Instagram, increasingly disinterested, working on a new thing called Rental Hell, which is going to be funny, about the rental crisis, which everyone loves.
Great.
It's a bit of an uplifting thing to finish this podcast on. And Yeah, we're going to do some more fun movies soon.
Yeah, great. Yeah. All right. Thanks for that, Garth.
Bye.
Thanks to Garth for joining me for the podcast today. This is the end of Season 7. I'll be taking a short break while I get on top of some work and gear up for our next season. I'll still be recording podcasts for Patreon, so if you want to hear my thoughts on Oppenheimer, Barbie, Asteroid City and more, you will find me over there. You can find me at patreon.com/Justin Hamilton, and there will be a tier that suits you. That's patreon.com/Justin Hamilton. Part of the reason I'm finishing this season now is that I have signed up for shows in South Korea at the end of the month. Yep, South Korea. I'm heading over with Nikki Britton. We're going to be doing a show together, and I'm very excited about that. But with everything else that's on, something had to give. So this seemed like a good place to draw this season to a close and give me enough time to get everything ready for the next season. Also, Adelaide friends, I'll be at the Rhino Room on the 8th of September. So if you're around, I'd love to see you there as well. Thanks for a great season. It's been a lot of fun having your company. Until then.
Thank you. Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style. Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.